You're listening to A Conduit's Diary. This is a podcast about me, Rachel, and my experiences as I investigate paranormal activity as a conduit. This is rated R for explicit because I do have a little bit of a foul mouth. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe and rate this podcast wherever you listen to it. Now we're on to episode 42. Can you see me now? Falling back into my normal routine came quicker than I thought. Rosa gave me 2 weeks off for bereavement, and while it took nearly 3 months before I was back answering calls, it felt like I never left. November started out typical. Carbon monoxide poisoning, a ghost that was really just a loose shingle on the roof, the usual. I didn't treat all of them like Marie with the whole honesty about what was going on. Most of them I exorcised their demon using a little bit of glue, nail guns, or other handy fixes. If I ever get bored of dealing with ghosts and demons, I could always join Stephanie and do a little bit of DIY. Maybe flip a house or two. Teresa's case, however, was a true haunting. And a pretty nasty one. It wasn't Teresa who reached out to me. It was a friend of hers named Mindy. Mindy's email was pretty dark, and while it may not have sounded supernatural to some readers, it did to me. Rachel, Teresa is my best friend, and I think something supernatural is going on with her. I heard about your services through a nanny who utilized you for her employer a few years ago. She said it was okay to share your information. I'm sorry if it wasn't. Teresa is going through a dark time. Over the last few months, she's become more and more reclusive. Her fiancé moved out and is threatening to leave her. She's been placed on administrative leave from her job because she yelled at a customer, which isn't like her at all. Teresa has the patience of a saint. While none of this sounds supernatural, her home is off. Every time I try to visit her, she doesn't let me inside, but I can feel the presence from within. I'm not sure if that makes sense. I just really want to help her, and she's quickly running out of friends. Please, Mindy. While not everyone can see ghosts and spirits and shit on the same level I can, I've met quite a few people who have a deeper connection to that part of the world. It's almost like the river of the other side runs parallel to ours, and some people can hear the water running or smell the wet dirt. Not very many people are like me and can walk through the whole damn thing. Mindy had me meet her in Glendale, which is a bit of a trek from the East Valley. I know I've described Phoenix before, but I'll give you a refresher. It's fucking huge. When someone says they live in Phoenix, they could be talking about any of the dozens of suburbs that scatter around the Phoenix metro area. One edge of Phoenix to the other can be up to 100 miles. It's large, it's sprawling, and even with freeways, it can be a pain in the ass to get to. Glendale is at least a 45-minute to an hour and a half drive for me, depending on traffic. Thankfully, my new car has better gas mileage than my old one. I can't exactly write off mileage for a business that doesn't exist, according to the government. Mindy met me at Glendale Heroes Park, in the parking lot. She was easy to spot on a Tuesday afternoon. There weren't many people there. Despite the cooling weather, it was still a bit warm to spend all day out in the sun. I parked near her older Audi and waved. "Rachel?" she asked. She gave me the same once-over most people do. "I'm just into my 30s. I'm 5'3" on a good day. I'm too pale to live in the desert. And my attempt at business attire to look professional isn't the best. Stephanie always tries to fix my style, but I prefer comfort any day." "You must be Mindy," I replied with a wide smile. She nods. "So Teresa's house is just up the road. Follow me?" It's not unusual for people to proceed like this. Hiring a psychic or a medium or a conduit has its own set of stigmas. It's one thing to go to a store and ask for a palm reading. It's another to invite someone into your home and give them access. While some people are totally comfortable with it, it's not unusual for people to hesitate to give out their friends' addresses. I followed her out of the park and down a few side streets into a quaint older neighborhood. Mindy parked in front of a beige stucco house with a desert landscape and a small bridge that crossed the yard. Once outside, Mindy turned to me, looking nervous. "She doesn't know I'm coming, does she?" I guessed. Mindy frowned and nodded, wringing her hands. "I knew she'd say no," she admitted. "That's okay. We can try," I offered. "She doesn't know" generally goes one of two ways. One, I impress them immediately with my ghost hunting skills, and they let me in. Two, they scream at me and their friend and slam the door in our faces. Option two is sometimes followed by a call from the person in question a few days later to invite me back, but not always. Option one was always easier, but definitely rarer. Mindy knocked on the door tentatively, her gaze darting about the porch. I understood instantly her discomfort. The house was unsettling. It's not that it smelled or anything, it's just the entire nature of it was ominous. I could feel the tendrils of dread and despair oozing from under the door. When Teresa opened the door, it hit me full in the face. Teresa looked exhausted. She was in her late 30s with curly brown hair that was starting to gray around her temples. She had dark brown skin and smile lines, but also dark circles and bloodshot eyes. She looked first at me and then Mindy, and I was struck with a wave of her anxiety. I'm not an empath by any means, but it was hard not to feel everything rolling off this woman with the full force of her emotions. "Who's this?" Teresa asked. "This is Rachel. She was referred to me by a friend," Mindy said gently. Teresa was immediately suspicious, her eyes narrowing. "Why?" Her tone was sharp, and by the way Mindy jumped, I could tell it wasn't usual for her to speak that way. While they spoke, my eyes slid to the foyer behind them. A man stood deeper in the living room, peering curiously at the open door. He was difficult to see from this far away, plus all the lights in the house were off. "Is that your fiancé?" I asked, nodding to the man. Teresa's neck nearly broke with the speed it turned to look behind her. She turned back to us, her eyes wide. "Who the fuck are you?" she asked. She stepped out of the house and closed the door behind her, suddenly in my face. "Is this a joke? Did she set you up for this? What?" She trailed off and rubbed her brow, tears collecting in her eyes. "Is it true? Did Jose come back?" Mindy asked gently. Teresa shook her head and waved her hand at Mindy to stop talking. "You can't come inside," Teresa said. I immediately understood why. "Okay, how about tea?" I offered. A few minutes later, we were down the road in a Starbucks. Teresa ordered a venti coffee thing with at least 100 shots of espresso. I settled for one of their weird lemonades. "So you saw him," Teresa confirmed when Mindy went to get her own drink. "The man in your house?" I asked. She shook her head. "Not a man. A demon." "Oh, I should have taken a closer look." "What makes you think he's a demon?" I asked. "Well, he's either a demon or I'm losing my mind. I like the first option better," she said. I smiled. I could understand that. A demon was a problem that could be dealt with, something to be banished or solved. Losing your mind, always questioning whether what you saw was real or not. I didn't wish that on anyone. "Okay, but why a demon and not a ghost?" I pressed. I was used to people thinking they had hauntings when they didn't, and thinking everything was a demon. Demon was a loose term. I wasn't sure exactly what to call some of the things I dealt with. They didn't refer to themselves as demons, but they did enjoy causing suffering, so I guess it fit. "Well, no one can see him but me," she started. I raised my eyebrows. By now, Mindy had returned with her drink and settled into the table with us. She reached over and patted Teresa's hand comfortingly, as if the woman didn't try to tear her head off just 20 minutes ago. No one? I pressed. She smiled ruefully. Except you, she said. When did you first see it? I asked. She took a deep breath and leaned back in her chair, racking her brain. Late August. I was in my kitchen cooking when I kept seeing something out of the corner of my eye. At the time, I ignored it. It happened now and then. I even went and got my eyes checked. The doctor said I was fine. Then after about 2 weeks of that happening, I actually saw it. I was in the kitchen again and I saw a flash out of the corner of my eye, but it didn't go away. It stayed. And when I turned to look, I saw a man. I thought he was a burglar, so I screamed for Jose. He was in the living room and he came running and looked around frantically. I pointed at the man and Jose was confused. He kept asking what I was pointing at and I kept yelling, the man standing right there. Finally, I realized he couldn't see him. Through all of this, the man just stared and smiled like it was the greatest thing he'd ever seen. Finally, I told Jose it must have been a reflection or something, and he was satisfied and went back to watching TV. But the man never left. He sat in the kitchen and watched me cook, smiling. He looked like a typical white man, tall, dark hair, pale skin. There was something off about him, but he didn't have like horns or anything. I decided I was just tired and that I didn't really see a man and that he wasn't really there. When I left the kitchen, he didn't follow, so I thought that was that. The next morning, I woke up and I looked through the whole house and I didn't see him. Even though I didn't see him, it's like I could feel him around every corner. I'd go into the bathroom and swear he was behind the shower curtain, but when I pulled it open, there was no one there. When I was cooking, I could feel his breath on my neck. But I'd turn and no one was there. It was driving me wild, so I started to ignore the sensations. He was gone for another few days. Just when I felt like I was safe and I'd imagined the whole thing, he returned while I was in the shower. I heard a noise in the bathroom and called out to Jose, thinking he was brushing his teeth or something while I was showering. When I pulled back the curtains to talk to him, I saw the man again. Again, I screamed and Jose came running, but he didn't see him. It didn't make sense. The man was right there. Jose looked at me like maybe I was losing it a little. So I lied and said that it must have been my own reflection in the mirror. The man watched me and giggled silently through the entire thing. So happy to see my fiancé doubt me. He watched me get dressed and he never left. Then I thought, she sighed, shaking her head as if embarrassed to say the next sentence. Then I thought, maybe Jose isn't on it. Maybe this man is teaming up with him to trick me. So I tried to take a photo of him, but every time I pressed the button on my phone, he'd move out of the way. I even set time photos and thought about installing cameras, but nothing. I couldn't catch him on film. So I invited Mindy over. She nodded to her friend, who winced at the shared memory. She didn't see him either. She even followed me around as I pointed him out, and he followed us from room to room. She'd just frown and shake her head. I thought, could my best friend and my fiancé be in on this? Were they sleeping together, and this was some elaborate plot to get us to break up and make it seem like I'm the problem? Mindy reached over and squeezed her hand again, nodding her encouragement. So I started isolating myself. From Jose, from Mindy, from everyone. I thought they were all in it together. I never saw the man sleep, and sometimes he'd be in the bedroom watching me sleep. Sometimes he'd just wait for me in the living room. As time went on and no one saw him, I thought, what if I am crazy? What if this is all in my head? Then he started to mess with my things. He would break things, like the TV or an old antique pot. Jose started to get angry. He thought I was doing it. He left after a big fight. She swallowed back tears and wiped her nose with the back of her hand. Then you were alone? I asked. She nodded. I think it's what he wanted. He never left my side after that. He started to leave the house with me. I even got a hotel, thinking he was stuck in the house, but he just showed up. I finally got some sleep, but around 2 a.m. I woke up with a horrible sensation that someone was watching me. He was sitting in the chair across the room just watching me sleep. That's when I knew it was either a demon or in my head. And like I said, it was easier for it to be a demon. I researched all I could about demons, but the internet is weird. I even went to a psychic to try and get her to remove him, but she was no help. Eventually, she trailed off and shook her head. "But you saw him," she said, her gaze sliding back to me. I nodded. "I did. Well, I didn't get a good look, but I saw there was a man in your home." Okay, so you can see him. It's not in my head, and that means you could get rid of him," she said. I thought through the inventory in my car and my purse. "I think I can. Here, you stay with Mindy. I'll take your keys and come back when your house is ready." Teresa dug through her purse without hesitation, but Mindy placed a hand on her wrist, pausing. "Are you sure you don't want to go with?" Mindy asked. Teresa scoffed and pulled her keys out, taking off a single door key and handing it to me. "Trust me, there's nothing left in that house to steal." Teresa was right about that. Her house was empty. No TVs, no decorative items. I wasn't sure if the demon destroyed them all or if she just took them down to try and salvage them. It wasn't just the empty house that made it so unsettling. It was the aura. Like I said, I'm no empath, but the thick blanket of anxiety and fear that covered the home made my stomach drop. Whatever was here set up roots and wasn't going to leave without a fight. I closed the door behind me, waiting for the creature to step into the light. It didn't. For something so oppressive, it was sure acting aloof. I wandered through the kitchen and the living room, pausing before the bedrooms. It felt like an invasion of privacy. Thankfully, the creature made itself known before that. I caught its reflection in the refrigerator. When I turned, it stood there, watching me carefully. "About time," I told it.
"For what?"
it replied. "You to show up. I don't have all day to wait around for you," I said. It regarded me for a moment before speaking. "You're the conduit." There it was again. The conduit. Not a conduit. The. Singular. How had I never noticed it before? Even when my mother was alive, they referred to me singularly. Was it because I was the only one dumb enough to make a deal with a demon? Probably. "Yep, in the flesh. Now you gotta go," I told it. "No, I like it here," he said. "I'm sure you do. I can tell by the way you've decorated," I told it. It must not have understood my immaculate humor because it just stared at me with deadened, empty eyes. Not a fan of that. "I won't leave," it said. I was afraid of that. Thankfully, I was prepared for such things. This creature, I wasn't sure of the real name, was nothing new. They existed in many iterations all over the world through multiple cultures, always on the fringe, always trying to isolate its victims and sucking any joy or love or energy from them to survive. We've met many of them through my podcast, but they tend to look less human. This one was remarkably human in appearance. "Well, it wasn't really a request," I said. While it was speaking, I fiddled through my bag slowly, my fingers curling over the item in question. I leaned across the kitchen counter that separated us, getting as close as I could. I didn't think I'd get more than one shot to trap this thing. If it went into hiding, ugh, that was gonna eat into my afternoon. "I won't go back there," it said. For the first time, it sounded nervous, almost afraid. I paused. "Go back where?" I asked. It looked down, and I instantly understood. The river that runs parallel to us, the one these creatures come from. "What's so bad about that place? Aren't all your friends there?" This time, when it smiled, it was sad, a facsimile of real emotion. Convincing, but I wasn't born yesterday. "You haven't listened lately, have you?" it asked. "You're unaware of what's going on. He's very angry, and he's losing power. The others are taking advantage of it." I didn't need to ask who he was. Good. Sounds like new leadership is in order, I said. It shook its head. There are no leaders, just those with more power and less power. With him gone comes a void. Some may not take lightly to the fact that the very creature that trapped their kind still walks up here unpunished. I guess I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. If it knew what I was doing, it did nothing to defend itself. In one smooth motion, my hand was out of my bag and the item, a little box covered with various crystals that Hema designed, was open on the counter. I reached across the counter and grabbed its arm. It watched me with mild curiosity, surprised when my fingers closed around its arm. I'm sure it'd never been touched by something on this plane of existence. It took a little wrangling to fit it into the small box, but once in, it wasn't getting out. The crystals, some mix of obsidian, smoky quartz, and peridot, shimmered as they locked the creature inside. I lifted the small box and turned it over in my hands. It would do for now, until I could find a break in the path between my realm and theirs. The creature was right. I wasn't really listening lately. I'd turned a blind eye to all of this the last few months, and I was worried what I may find when I did listen. Did I want the strife? Did I want that evil creature I so hated to topple? Would it be replaced by something worse? Would my curse end? These were discussions I would put into my own box and shove away until I was ready, maybe in 5 to 10 business years. That's it? Teresa asked. It'd been maybe an hour since I left them at Starbucks. Mindy looked relieved. Teresa looked skeptical. I'm a professional, I offered with a shrug. It wasn't until we were back in the house and Teresa took a deep breath that she seemed satisfied. He's gone, she said, incredulous. What do I tell Jose? My job, she asked. Tell Jose you were stressed at work and now that you've quit, things are better. Start small and slow, I offered, as if I have any place to give relationship advice. But I was fired, Teresa said. I shrugged. Then say the firing was unfortunate, but needed, and you're slowly getting back to normal. This satisfied them enough, and I left after I was paid. I paused outside my townhome, considering the creature's words. Out of curiosity, I dipped my hand just below the surface of our world, my fingers trailing into the other plane of existence. They came back covered in a thick, purple substance. A Conduit's Diary is created by me, written and produced by me, mixed horribly and edited by me. Cover art created by BMC Design on Fiverr. Music, intro and outro, created by Chris Hornberger.